What is that thing then? What's that called?
This is just a wee digital recorder, so that will hopefully give us a nice clean recording, which I'll share with you afterwards. Colin, I'd just like to start off our discussion today by asking you how and at what point in your life did you become involved in social enterprise?
Yeah, well, I suppose social enterprise is kind of a modern term, so it was really community business as it was known as. I got involved in 81, when I joined the Local Enterprise Advisory Project to work with John Pierce, Duncan McTavish, Margaret Lindsay and Glenn Buchanan. So there was four or five of us that were then working out of the Local Enterprise Advisory Project, which at that time was based in Paisley College, being sponsored by Ron Young, who was a councillor at Strathclyde Regional Council, who was very keen on encouraging the idea of looking at how communities, and particularly deprived communities, or as the regional council called them at that time, areas of priority treatment, might be supported to look at creating their own enterprises. So that's when I got involved. Prior to that, I'd been a rural community worker in Cumbria. And it was kind of interesting to see that job being advertised, the LEAP job being advertised, because I'd been working in communities in Cumbria, and one in particular, Alston, which is the highest village in England, in the Pennines, and the foundry there had closed, and I got some money at that time to make a film of what was going to happen to the community, and in talking to people you realise people had ideas for enterprise, for things that might be run by the community, but it was an idea that had no home to go to at that time. There was that wee missing bit of thinking around a community itself being able to own or start up its own enterprises and businesses. So partly because of that experience and thinking about these things, I was then enticed back to Scotland and to Glasgow in 81.
Mm-hmm. And so what kind of, you mentioned that at that time the areas you were working in were known as areas of priority treatment. Could you tell me a little bit more about life in those areas at that time?
Ooh, so that's a good question. It'd be interesting to know how much it differs from life in these areas now, because I suppose one of the kind of sadder things to report is, despite all the work and investment and time that people have spent, some of these areas are still hard hit and still suffering. I think maybe just comparing life then and now, maybe there's more of a sense of what's possible now than there was back in the late 70s, early 80s, because so much has happened since then in terms of community endeavour and community activism. And a lot of that was just hatching, or it felt like it was just hatching round about then. You know, so there were kind of wee beacons like things like Craig Miller Festival, Easter House Festival, and so on, where communities were thinking about doing things, often around the arts, that were a kind of wee inspiration that in a way triggered some of the follow-on thought about communities actually trying to create their own employment. But back in the 80s, there's very, very high levels of unemployment, generational unemployment, very high levels of council housing, obviously, back in these days. 70-80% council housing in a lot of these areas, and a sense of I'll just tell you a wee story, because actually it kind of highlights some of that. One of my first experiences of work in APTs, if you like, was in Forgewood and Renton down the Vale of Leven, Forgewood in North Lanarkshire near Motherwell. And I always remember talking to somebody who said, the council are absolutely terrible. The council are absolute rubbish. My window's been broken. My door and my window's been broken. And it's been broken for 6 months and the council won't come out and fix it. And I said to him, well, how did it get broken? So I came back drunk one night and couldn't find my key, so I smashed my door and my window. So he did that. He smashed his door and his window to get in, but then he wouldn't make the connection between that him needing to get that fixed. That was the council's job. So it was very much a kind of dependency culture and the whole thing of getting them to fix it for us, to do it for us. So that whole sense that the answer lie elsewhere was huge. And so that wee story just kind of sums up that prevailing attitude. As there's only very few folk that thought, well, maybe we should be trying to do something for ourselves. And I suppose that's what we're trying to tap into.
Mm-hmm. So when you started with the Local Area Advisory Project, what was your role in that?
Well, I can't remember my official title, but it was to help set up community businesses in the areas that I was working in, which primarily were Forgewood and Renton to start with, and then became, later on, I had a much wider role for developing community businesses in and around the greater Glasgow area. So I ended up working in places like Postle and the East End of Glasgow and Drumchapel, Easterhouse, Castlemilk, Maryhill, Rockhill, with a much wider remit.
Mm-hmm. And so what kind of people were you meeting? You mentioned, you know, there's the chap who breaks his own door and waits for the council, but you said there was another group of people interested in kind of getting active in the community. Could you tell me a bit more about those people?
I think it's probably true anywhere you go that there are a group of people that you'll find that are wanting to do things, and they might be kind of small things like running an arts festival or getting a football team up and running or doing something about an open space that needs looked after or something like that, and or people with ideas for how they might take on an empty council flat, turn it into a community flat. So it was people like that that we're kind of we're working with and who were also keen to talk to us about what might happen. And some of these folk would be in existing community groups of one kind or another, and I think in terms of a direct connection, some of these community groups may have had some experience of temporary employment schemes. So one of the pushes for community businesses in general came from the fact that people in some of these communities had experience of temporary employment programs, but were also frustrated by the restrictions, frustrated that as a community group you could maybe take on somebody as a trainee for 6 months or a year, but then they were gone. In fact, the rules were such that you couldn't create out of temporary employment schemes full-time work within the organisation that was doing the training or receiving that person for a short time. So there were some, as ever, some crazy rules that people were thinking, I wonder how we get beyond them and maybe even use training programmes to create real jobs that the community actually have set up, developed and then manage into the future. So there was a wee bit of a spark, you know, for and some fertile territory for looking at creating community-owned businesses.
And looking back, was there any Was it kind of workspaces or shops, or what kind of initiatives do you remember kind of, you know, taking hold in those communities?
Yeah, it varied fantastically from place to place. I think the thing that was quite important was to engage with people and communities, with the communities themselves, to look at what the communities themselves had as assets or as needs or as opportunities that might be developed. So it wasn't necessarily coming with a fixed idea of why don't you set up a workspace, why don't you do this, or equally from the local community's point of view, a burning idea they already had. It was often a sense of let's sit down together and look what might be possible. And that could lead you to say, well, there's a derelict open space that might be turned into a community garden, or there's an empty block of flats that might be turned into small workspace units or into a wee cafe or something like that. So it was from looking at what was there, and I think that's an important thing that workers like myself went in and did with communities. We actually sat down and said, what has this community got? What's it need? What are the opportunities? Where can we take this? And also looking at what skills people had or might have or might be interested in acquiring. So it was, there's a lot of talk nowadays of asset-based community development as if it's just been discovered, but it's actually right at the heart of what community enterprise, community business work was about. It's taking that look both at the assets and needs of a community. And that was quite unusual at the time, because when we would go to the likes of, say, Scottish Development Agency in the early 80s, they would say, oh, we can't come and work with you in Postal or wherever, Renton, there's no point in us working there because there's nothing to develop. They actually said that. They said, there is no economy in these areas, so we are not, it's not an area that we would work in. So doing that work in that way was actually very important to look at what might be developed. I became quite keen on looking at the service sector, where, if you like, there was quite a lot of bad practice in terms of employment. But we also had a lot of people in communities saying, in that Yosser Hughes way, we could do that, give us a job. And so Postal is a fantastic example of that, in that walking around the streets with people in Postal, young guys, they would say, see these security guards, they're not doing a good job at all, they're drunk half the time, they're only in looking after properties when they're being renovated, and actually properties are vandalised on either side of them doing that job. We could do something much, much better. And that led to creation of a security company in Postal that still exists, 20, 30 years on now. Similarly, in Postal, a group of women said to me, well, we could do that. We could clean the houses along Mary Hill Road near Postal. They're all being built by Lawrence currently. It's an opportunity, but how do we get into that? So we just walked into these housing developments and talked to Quantity Surveyors at Lawrence and start to understand what it would be like to create an industrial cleaning company. And you know that company still exists today, 20, 30 years later. But it was just that process of walking alongside people, literally walking alongside them and saying, what could be done here? And I guess one of the things is about LEAP and Community Business Scotland, Community Business Strathclyde, was that we had time to do that. And it'd be interesting to know if anybody does that now. I'm not sure that they do.
And so when you began working with leap, did you have any kind of ultimate aims in mind when you started that work, or was it very much experimental?
It was experimental at the time, but it was quite focused as well, in the sense that the aim was clear that you want to go and work with people in communities to look at setting up community-owned businesses that would create jobs. So creation of jobs or training and or training opportunities for people that might then turn into jobs. So it was a very clear remit, and it was different to generic community work, which had maybe less of a focus. We had a very clear focus, and I suppose that throughout the 80s you saw that, you know, with the LEAP and community business, Strathclyde community business, we had a very specific focus. But equally, there were people wanting to set up food co-ops or credit unions that also had, you know, a clear focus of what they were trying to do in communities. And so it's quite an exciting time, actually. So the community business thing, food co-ops, credit unions, community arts activities, the birth of kind of some of the housing associations as well. So there was quite a kind of a shift from, if you like, that dependency culture that we're talking to about to one of and more how can we do things and how can we do them at a more local, community orientated, community owned type way.
That's really interesting. Do you know where that energy came from? Do you have any ideas about why it happened at that moment?
It's a good question. I mean, I think in very sort of a kind of boring terms, I think it did come from community groups who had some experience of temporary employment schemes that I mentioned. Just there was a kind of experience growing of community groups not just being volunteers, having some staff, having, and again, through Urban Aid funding, Manpower Services Commissioner, what it might have been called, something different at that time. So communities getting hands on money that came and went, or training opportunities that came and went. And I think that then led to them having a sense of, well, can we not create something a bit more permanent, a bit less dependent on grant money coming in or training money that's controlled from outside the community. So I think it came from that. So it was a mix probably of maybe some people starting to recognise that you couldn't just rely on the council for everything, on one hand. So thinking about shifting away from that dependency culture. Also recognising that the whole nature of work and jobs was changing, and that huge, large-scale employers in shipping or mining or whatever, or steel, were not, had gone or weren't going to be there for very much longer, and that there's a need to look at other types of employment. So I think just the start of that sense of enterprise was coming in. And then, of course, we had the kind of the start of Thatcher years. And in a way, this was almost a kind of a response to that. It's maybe tapping into some of that, but actually it was a kind of alternative response to it. And actually, probably in about 84, 85, we actually had an emissary from Downing Street come up to look at what we were doing. Because one of the interesting things about this was so new. We got visited at LEAP, and particularly Strathclyde Community Business, by people from all over the world, but also including folk from Downing Street, who I remember taking out to Postle and showing them what we're doing there, and them coming away very, very perplexed. And they said, on their way out, they were said that this is fantastic. We're not sure if it's capitalism or Thatcherism or communism. They couldn't work it out. They were definitely perplexed. And so there was maybe a kind of wee spark of something about, you know, shifting away from dependency, experience, practical experience on the ground, and then a desire to create some alternatives to some of the there is no such thing as society, to show there was society, there were communities, and they could take part in this enterprise culture as well, and maybe do it better than some of the private sector.
Mm. Yeah, that's very interesting, the analogy between this kind of struggle between left and right, as you might characterise it in, you know, is this community business capitalism or communism? Which is it for you? How do you see position community business within that scale?
I think probably the answer is... As somebody once said to me, because we're setting up, this was more recently, albeit 20 years ago now, I was working in a place and a local businessman got heavily involved, and other businesses were challenging him and saying to him, why are you getting involved with all this community stuff? We're just business folk, we should just be doing our own thing. Is this not communism, all this community ownership and control? And he said, well, actually, no, it's not. He said, communism is ruled from the centre and is centralist and controlling, whereas this is run from within with love. And he said, that's right, communism's run from the top, from the centre, with fear. And this is communitarianism, which is run from within with love. I thought that was absolutely, you couldn't say any better than that. So I wouldn't say it's either left or right, it's something that comes from within a community and tries to create that kind of grassroots sense of ownership and control and well-being, if you like.
I think it's interesting that, you know, you characterised community business as trying to create some kind of well-being. Reflecting on that in terms of the frustrations communities were feeling at the time with kind of job creation schemes and whatever, how was the jobs created by community business? Were they different from the jobs that were created through job creation schemes? Because I know there were sometimes community businesses also made use of certain schemes. How did they reconcile that tension, or did they try to tweak them in any way to reorientate, you know, the kinds of jobs that were available in areas like Postal or whatever?
Yeah, I mean, a great thing for us was we battled for years with the Manpower Services Commission over the types of training places that they had and the rules that bound them and made it difficult to use these schemes to create full-time jobs. So European Social Fund money in the kind of mid-80s again was very, very important, because we were able to devise our own training programmes within the framework of community-owned companies, that were able to access these training programs, use them for six-month training for job opportunities that we'd identified would be possible. So we were able to make a link, a direct link that hadn't been possible until 84, until Strathclyde Community Business was created. To make that link, and we could get our hands on ESF money ourselves, that we could then create a direct link between training for jobs that we'd identified that might be possible. So if you look at the Postal Allender Cleaning Company, as it's now known as, we identified through walking with people the potential for industrial cleaning. We then looked at who was doing that, and the people who in private companies had virtually no training. We were able to design an ESF, tailor-made ESF training program that would train local women in industrial cleaning, that would then enable them to get jobs doing that work on the edge of their community in a way that was better than any private company could offer. And so we were able to make that very strong between training and local job creation. So the tools and the access to funding and how it was managed was actually very important. And the community side, the fact that you'd created within Postal or Renton or Forgewood or wherever, a community-owned company as a structure, that community-owned company was then able to make sense of training schemes, creating jobs that would be income-generating and give people proper source of employment within their community. But equally, we're doing other things as well that might be not so income-generating. So you had, I think, the culture of creating a structure within the community of a community-owned company, then it allowed people to tap into these opportunities. So you had to change the culture within the community, but also externally in terms of funding regimes and how money was provided to support that endeavour. So that's why Strathclyde Community Business was an important step from LEAP to that body. It was able to not only just develop in communities but develop and fund things.
Mm-hmm. I think the concept of community ownership is a fascinating one. How do you maintain community ownership over time?
It's a very good question. My own view is you have to keep renewing that process regularly. So my work, which is kind of step away from what we're talking about, but my work, but it's something I took out of the community business work that I did, is that you need to enable communities to be enterprising. And to do that, you need to enable communities to, it's quite simple, to be able to plan, to be able to organise, to implement their plans, and then to make things happen. And that might be about creating jobs or owning bits of land or whatever. But the planning, where I've spent a lot of time, is actually enabling communities to plan, to look at themselves, look at what their community is like, engage people, participatory planning, to engage people in a planning process that then draws them into an arena of doing, organising and doing. So community organisations that engage in that widespread community planning every 3 or 5 years are more likely to be robust and more likely to be sustainable, because they dip back into that community wellspring as part of the culture of an enterprising community. They'll plan, they'll organise, and so the organisations look like or reflect what needs to be done in the community, because that's where they've got their mandate from, and they then make things happen accordingly. But they then need to dip back into it, because the reality, and it's very true of community business, was that community business, some of the most successful community businesses became the ones that were least attached to their communities, because they ended up getting managers in to run specific businesses. Heads were down in the doing of it, and whether they lifted the heads back up to look at the wider community again was debatable and variable across communities. So sustainability, I think, requires that kind of constant regular, every 3-5 years, reflection and re-engagement with communities. So you just don't end up with a business that's run by a few folk within a community, which might be very different to a community-run business.
Mm-hmm. I think that's a really important point. I feel we're maybe kind of progressing in the kind of chronology here a wee bit from those early days at LEAP onto a kind of the more kind of mature community business movement. From your days at LEAP, what kind of work did you do following that? What was your work in the kind of later 80s and 1990s? What did you find yourself doing?
Well, it's interesting to reflect on about different stages. LEAP was very intense work in communities, for me personally. Setting up some of the first community businesses in these communities and exploring how that model worked. Strathclyde Community Business came into being, I think, in 1984. And then I had more of a managerial role with a team of community business development workers who were working. So we're working, covering a larger geography. And also there was a kind of, at that time, there's also a desire to spread the word about community business as well throughout the rest of Scotland, but also in other parts of the UK and abroad. So when I left Strathclyde Community Business in 1989, I met my wife at Strathclyde Community Business as well, and we went to work in New Zealand. We were invited to work in New Zealand for 6 months to look at the opportunities for community enterprise in New Zealand, and helped take that community enterprise, that charitable company limited by guarantee model, to New Zealand. It didn't exist there, and we were in a contract with the Department of Internal Affairs in New Zealand, and a trust or a foundation called the Roy McKenzie Foundation. And through them, we actually met with charitable lawyers and were able to introduce them to the Charitable Company Limited by Guarantee. And from there, there's been a wee flourishing of community enterprise and community business in New Zealand. So we were there for 6 months doing that, came back, and then became the first consultants to work for Community Business Scotland. And at that time, we were quite keen on childcare, and its potential as community run or social enterprise, I guess, or community businesses. So we were actually involved for a few years specifically in encouraging communities to become involved in childcare, after school care. Groups and so on, nurseries. So there's a nursery that's set up down in Port Glasgow at that time, and a whole range of others. And we actually did childcare strategies for a number of local authorities. And then from then on till today, so from the early 90s till now, I've been a freelance consultant working with communities. Always on the ground. So all my life I've just spent working actually in communities on the ground, and a shift, I guess, was to go rural again, so from the urban working of LEAP and Strathclyde Community Business, and then since the 90s mainly been working in rural and small town communities and helping communities to plan, as we're just talking about, helping communities to prepare their own action plans for their own future. We devised a programme called Community Futures for communities, to assist communities to prepare plans for their future, and also to set up community organisations out of these plans. So since the 90s, I've been involved in setting up about 70 community development trusts around rural Scotland. So with Alan Tufts. So Alan Tufts and I, since about 1995, been working together to do rural and small town work, which echoes very strongly the work we did in urban Scotland in the 80s. I also spent a couple of years in Canada, working again in community enterprise in Canada, and again sort of taking some of that community enterprise model to Canada and working with Native Indian communities and Inuit communities and small town and rural communities there.
That's fascinating. There's a couple of points I'd maybe like to follow up on a wee bit there. One would be within this like really vast range of experiences, is there for you, obviously they'll be working in very different contexts, but is there an essence of, you know, continuity within your work? What are the similarities in these communities and your approach to working with them?
Well yeah, it's a total continuity, if you like. It's just, yeah, it's all the same. It's all the same work. And it is all about working in communities with local people to help them have a greater say over their own future, to enable them to become partners in their own development. So that's a kind of phrase or value that I've kind of stuck with since the 70s, that notion of communities. A belief in community as a thing in itself, first of all, and then a desire to work with communities to enable them to have a greater say over their own future, to be proactive and not just reactive to change, and to be able to make things happen in a way that suits them and tackles the kind of things that they identify as problems, but also enables them to grab hold of opportunities. So it's a constant strand.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, I guess, it's been about the community as much as the what comes out of it. So it doesn't have to be a community business, a community-owned business that creates jobs or generates income. It could be about a community developing a good youth program, tackling drug and alcohol problems. It could be about environmental improvements. It could be about getting better play facilities or a community centre or whatever, or be able to work effectively with the health board or the forestry commission. So it's about the ability within communities to be able to shape their own future is the thing that's always interested me and that I've stuck with.
Is there any one community that you've worked with that you feel has been particularly successful in kind of taking on that message and changing their future?
There's actually a lot of them. There's a lot of them, and what's interesting, you know, so I could give you examples of lots of different communities, but what's interesting too is, and that we've spent a bit of time on, is trying to create a recognition of that as a possibility, not just within communities, but within local authorities, regeneration companies, and other bodies. So one of the great things that we're able to do is, for example, set up a program of our community futures work at regional levels. So, for example, at the start of the Lochland and Trossachs National Park, we're able to design a program of community action planning for each of the 24 communities that were going to be in the park, so that they could influence the shape of the national park plan. So bottom-up planning influencing a strategic or top-down plan. And so now if you go to the Loch Lomond Trossachs National Park, you'll find communities that every 5 years prepare their own plans for their own future, They all have development trusts. We've helped them set up development trusts. They're all undertaking programs of work based on what the community have said is important over that 5 years. And by and large, a lot of them have success in delivering these programs. And they deliver them not just on their own. There's a culture being created about them working in partnership with the planning agency, the housing body, the health board, the police, the roads department. So it's a kind of, it's become a joint endeavour. And it's never going to be perfect, but at least there's a culture developing. We've managed to do the same thing in East Ayrshire Council, where East Ayrshire Council are committed to assisting every community in East Ayrshire to develop to develop their own community action plan, and they're working with them, with each community, to help deliver the things that are in these plans. So success for us has been about stories in communities, and success in communities, but equally success in developing that culture of recognising that if you enable communities to plan their own future, they become great partners to work with, and they also need help to make these things happen. It's got to be a two-way street. So it's about changing that culture. And we're doing that slowly here, and also curiously in Ireland, where we have a programme of community futures working in County Mayo, where 30 communities currently, it's an ongoing programme, have been assisted to prepare plans for their future, and the communities then work to make them happen, but with the support of a shifting culture at the kind of council, county level, that sees people working alongside them.
That's fascinating. If you could go back to the kind of late 1980s, is there anything you'd do differently in hindsight? So as well as acknowledging the successes, is there anything you'd change?
Well, I think it's very interesting how things shift. I mean, just in general, you know, certainly when we started working in communities in the early 80s, it was a movement. It was a movement and a belief that this was possible. And that was a movement and a belief not just by people like me who were working in the communities, but within the communities themselves. And that really was a very exciting time to be involved. And great things came out of that, things that still exist, like Govan Workspace, Inverclyde Community Development Trust, Postle, Allender Securities, they're all a lot of them still going. But I think what's interesting, it's probably inevitable, is once you start to formalise that and draw in other monies into that. So I was saying to you, for example, Scottish Development Agency weren't involved in the up until the mid-80s. Once they started putting money into this, there's a whole shift towards what I guess you might now recognise as social enterprise, where it's about individuals creating businesses that might have a kind of social value, but that's an entirely different thing, certainly in my mind, to a community business, which is much more about the community as a whole and what it needs and what its assets are, what its opportunities are. And so there almost there's been a kind of split. Maybe it's a healthy thing. There's now essentially two things: the social enterprises of a whole range of varieties and hues, but there's still community enterprise, most commonly called now community development trusts, or done through community development trusts, and done through the type of forward planning about communities taking ownership over their own future and their own organisation making things happen. So there's a whole strand there. I was personally in the 80s a wee bit sorry to see that being lost, and then I suppose people like me and others had to reclaim it in what we've done, what we've gone on to do. But at the same time, there's a push to more a kind of social enterprise as a more hard to pin down concept, maybe, that then evolved. So I wouldn't say it's necessarily a right or a wrong thing. It's just interesting to see that shift in culture. And so it's encouraging to think that there's still people wanting to work in whole communities and find out what whole communities need and want and support that endeavour, just as there is people who are interested in helping individuals set up social enterprise. So it's kind of been an evolution. So it's not necessarily a kind of one thing's better than the other. It's just there was a change towards the late 80s, partly funding led. I think also partly led by the formalisation of this type of work. You got more councils wanting to go into these areas, large scale partnerships happening, private public sector partnerships with maybe the community sort of kind of tailed on. So there was a shift from communities creating a kind of wellspring of endeavour within their own communities, and not many people wanted to help them, and so that left the field quite wide open for communities to take ownership of that. And then at the end of the 80s you had a more formalised approach with public-private partnerships coming into Drumchapel, Castlemilk and so on, and we need to do this and we need to do that, and communities maybe lost a wee bit of purchase at that point and maybe had to go on to reclaim it or try to reclaim it later on. So that's a very interesting shift. So if you like, you go into a place like Raploch or Shortleys in Kilmarnock, absolutely wonderful public, private sector, PPI, PPFI, schools and community centres. If you ask people in Raploch, what would you like? They'd say, we'd like a community centre, because they don't see it, that huge edifice, as theirs. Yeah. Sorry, that was a bit of a ramble, but there.
No, rambling.
Number we stranded there.
Rambling is totally encouraged.
Just as well. You don't even need to encourage it.
I'm just thinking that maybe a little bit more about this change between community business and social enterprise. And you mentioned a couple of factors that were important there. Do you think that the work that community businesses did, have they been recognised in this shift social enterprise? Is, you know, I suppose what I'm asking is, are there elements of continuity, the recognition of the value of community business, and has that process of learning been taken forward into social enterprise, or do you see it as a kind of a break, and that perhaps some of those lessons of the early work has been lost?
I'm sure it's not been lost. I think it's just a, it's a kind of a rainbow field now, isn't it? You know, of many different colours and shapes and sizes. Of, you know, if we're calling the whole thing social enterprise, there's just so many shades of it. Some of it's more enterprise, some of it's more social, and then some of it is still what you might call community enterprise or community business. I'm personally sad that the terminology is maybe not clear. I'd like still to think that there was a clearer understanding of community enterprise, community business, and you know, even if it's a subset of social enterprise, it's still recognised as community business, which is quite different to social enterprise. Some of it's similar, but some of it's quite different.
Mm.
And the stuff, I think it's maybe goes back to this thing of community enterprise in my mind stems from looking at a whole community. And so it's geographically based or community of interest based, and it starts from understanding what's in that community and what its needs and opportunities and assets are, and it goes from there and organises from there. Whereas social enterprise might be just about a few folk thinking that setting up a bakery might be a good thing. It's a great thing, and it might have some social goals too, but it's different from looking at a whole community.
Mm. Do you think, just kind of thinking about this idea of community, it's something I'm interested in, do you think community exists in the same way now as it did back in the 1970s and 1980s?
Yeah, I would say absolutely. I mean, in many ways I work in rural communities, primarily in small town communities, but we also worked a lot in the last few years in coal mining communities, and they fascinate me in the sense that I worked in Moodysburn, for example, which I always thought was just a bunch of houses between Glasgow and Cumbernauld. And the planners think it is too. They actually call that stretch from Glasgow to Cumbernauld the Northern Corridor, which has got to be a dreadful thing to call real places. What's it the Northern Corridor of? Presumably it's the Northern Corridor of Glasgow, but it contains real communities. And one of them is Moodysburn. But it wasn't until I went in and worked there that I realised it's actually a proud ex-coal mining community. And the coal mining shut, you know, in the 50s or early 60s. But it's still the ethos that helps define that community. And people are proud there. There's a memorial to a mining disaster there. The people gather around every year. The people who are on the community organisations are all trace their families back to mining families. And there's a pride that helps define that community that's way beyond what you see with your eye, because it just looks like a bunch of houses. But when you actually tap into that, it's amazing what comes out of that in terms of what the community thinks of itself and what it should be and how special the green belt around it is to them to retain that sense of identity that could be lost at a planner's whim with infill housing in the Northern Corridor. So we constantly find that communities still exist. People still perceive themselves as communities very, very strongly, whether it's urban or rural. We're working down in Shortleys in Kilmarnock at the moment, which is another neighbourhood. It's again, can be seen as Southwest Kilmarnock. But Southwest Kilmarnock is actually a number of different communities, all with their own distinct identity. And Shortleys is a post-war community with every type of housing in it. Some of them built in steel. They were steel houses. They were built using redundant battleships from World War II. So the houses were absolutely dreadful. It was a great, good use for the battleships, the steel for the battleships. The houses were absolutely freezing in winter and hot in summer. And actually, it's these things that give people a sense of community in adversity in some cases, like some of the terrible housing they had. But people carry that. You talk to people in these communities and they know that story, they have that story, these stories to hand. Some of their long drives were built by prisoners of war during World War II before the houses were put up. And people have that sense of it. If you're just driving past, you just see a bunch of houses. Again, a scheme, another scheme. But you go in and you don't have to spend very long, and these things come bubbling to the surface. And it's what people see themselves as and what helps to sustain them. And if you can tap into that, then it's amazing what can happen. But if you ignore it, then it's just a pile of houses.
This kind of backtracking a wee bit, but you mentioned you did a lot of work around childcare at a certain point. And I was just wondering if I could expand on that a wee bit. You know, why was this an important area for potential community enterprises? Is it in the kind of 1990s or?
Yeah, sort of, yeah. Early 1990s. I think for a number of reasons, obviously it had a direct relationship to creating opportunities for women to go back to work. I think this was a kind of shift, again, took place in the 80s, not through the 80s, and obviously beyond, about the shift in the work in kind of the workforce, more women going back to work, and as a knock-on effect of that, the barriers, looking at the barriers to that, and training and access to childcare being two classic barriers. But then also the finances of that, also the difficulty of that, you know, if you have to pay too much for childcare and you're getting a low paid job, then the difference is almost unsustainable. You're kind of working to pay for the childcare or whatever, and so on. It was always seen as a classic role for community business. It's a good question because it taps into a classic role that was seen for community business. And one of the things we always used to say was, there's some things that communities can do better than either the private sector or the public sector. And that was a key area for community businesses to look at. And childcare was a good example of that, where public sector might provide childcare for the most in need, the most vulnerable families and so on, free. And then private sector might provide it at an expense for those who could afford it. And there was a huge gap in the middle of looking at affordable childcare that was about helping women to get back to work. It was about creating good training places for people within that business, and trying to deliver it in a way where the profit motive was subdued. You know, so there's that sense of community businesses setting up businesses that wouldn't interest the private sector in terms of the profit motive, but they could still wash their face, create jobs, create opportunities for women, and provide a valuable social service. So childcare is a great example of that, as is care is in general, care sector. So you asked me earlier about examples of communities that have done well. Killin would be a good example, where we work to help Killin prepare a plan for its own future. And one of the things that came up was the need to support the elderly in the community, because about a third of the population was over 65. And just shortly after that prioritisation exercise from the community, the only care home in the community was due to shut. And so we organised a community buyout for that care home. And that was in 2003-04, and so it's still going today as a social enterprise, you might say. It's called Killin Care Trust. But again, it's a great example of a community taking on a business in the midst of that community that was of no interest to the private sector, because it was a 10-bed care home, which might even be the only one left in Scotland, who knows. Because 10 beds aren't economical for the private sector. There's virtually no profit margin, but it provides a phenomenal service to the elderly in Killin. It creates about 15, 16 jobs in Killin itself. It's right in the heart of the community, across from the primary school. It's a thing of great wonder and beauty. Wouldn't have been done by the public sector, couldn't be done by the private sector, and the community, but the community are running that. And so childcare, care of the elderly, nursing homes, these are great subjects for community ownership.
Struck me kind of hearing that you've obviously got such a wealth of experience in working with communities all over the world, but are you still surprised sometimes by the things that communities want when you start to work with them, you know, or is it kind of usually things like a care home or, you know, affordable childcare or commonalities, or are there little surprises every now and again too?
A lot of them are things in common. You know, there are lots of things in common about social things like care services and outlets for young people, sports and recreation, environmental things like community gardens and forests and paths, cultural things, celebrating their culture. In one way or another, through events and arts and heritage projects. So these are the stuff. There's the food of community endeavour. It slightly shifts over time, you know. So you see, in the last 10, 15 years, a lot more interest in sustainability, in one form or another. You know, sort of. Transport systems that are less reliant on fossil fuels, or growing local produce, energy, renewable energy, energy efficiency. So you're seeing a shift. It's quite interesting because we've always tried to work with communities in an open, holistic way. So we've never said, tell us. You can tell us anything about your community as long as it looks like this, or as long as it looks shied away from that. And so we've never sold the work of working with communities and helping communities make statements about their future and take control of it as having a lean in any way. It's not necessarily been a green thing, but naturally it's become much more like that, much more about carbon reduction and adaptation and looking at renewable energy of one kind or another. So you're seeing a shift.
Okay, so I've just got a couple of questions that I'd like to ask. Do you feel optimistic about the future of social enterprise?
Well, I suppose I feel not qualified to talk about social enterprise as a whole, but community enterprise in one form or another, I think, is here to stay, is growing. The whole Community Empowerment Act, the whole land reform in Scotland and so on, all point towards that as a growing field, as communities' role in their own future, in creating jobs and owning and managing assets and resources, it's growing like Topsy. What you've got to watch out for when these things become fashionable and of the moment is you have to watch out for things like tick box exercises. In terms of the way people work with communities, think, oh, we must be doing this with communities, we'll do this, this and that, and then we can say we've done it. You know, so there's this huge push towards community ownership and communities having a greater say in the future, there's also pitfalls. So by and large it's good, there's also pitfalls, there's tick box exercises and go on. There's a desire to, there can even be a desire to offload assets which are really liabilities on communities. There can be a confusion that says that what communities need to do is generate income through social enterprise, whereas how do you know that? you actually take a step back and spend time walking with communities, find out what it is that communities need, and then acting. So it might not be about assets, it might not be about income generation, but it should be about communities having a say of their own future. So there's a greater trend towards it, but also that trend does come with, as ever, top-down agendas that communities themselves have to be aware of.
That's fascinating. I don't have any further questions, but is there anything you think we've overlooked in this conversation, or anything you'd like, any just wee initiatives or anything that you'd like to highlight or think would make it a valuable addition to the recording?
No, it's an endless topic of conversation. But I think you've covered it. You've covered it very well.
Okay, great. Well, we can always come back to it.
Yeah.
So if you're happy, I'll stop the recording here for now.